Now they're going to help out with a scripture lesson this morning. And as they're coming up, I don't know if you heard Bev earlier, and this was totally out of our hands, but In From the Cold has stopped their program for the church hosting families. So there is no longer any In From the Cold. And that's unfortunate, but they're moving on to other ventures at In From the Cold. And so we wish them well. This is a story that many of us are familiar with. Jesus is being bugged over and over and over again about who he's hanging out with. They're not too thrilled with who he's hanging out with. And so Jesus told them a number of stories, and this is one of them.
Once there was a man who had two sons, and one of the younger sons said to him,
"Father, give me my share of the property now."
So the man divided his property between his two sons, and after a few days, the younger son sold his part of the property and left home with the money. He went to a country far away where he wasted his money in reckless living. He spent everything he had, and a severe famine spread over the country, and he was left without a thing. So he went to work with one of the citizens of that country, who sent him out to a farm where he took care of the pigs. He wished to fill himself with bean pods, and the pigs ate, but no one gave him anything to eat. At last, he came to his senses.
"All my father's hired workers have more than they can eat, and here I am about to starve. I will get up and go to my father and say, 'Father, I have sinned against God and against you. I'm no longer fit to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired workers.'"
So he got up and started back to his father. He was still a long way from home, and then his father saw him. His heart filled with pity, and he ran and threw his arms around his son and kissed his son. And the son said,
"Father, I have sinned against God and against you. I am no longer fit to be called your son."
But the father called to his servants,
"Hurry, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet. Then go and get the prize calf and kill it, and let us celebrate with a feast. For this son of mine was dead, but now he is alive. He was lost, but now he has been found."
And so the feasting began. And in the meantime, the elder son was out in the field on his way back when he came close to the house and heard the music and dancing. So he called out to one of the servants and asked him,
"What's going on?"
The servant answered,
"Your brother has come back home, and your father has killed the prize calf because he has got him safe and sound."
The elder son was so angry that he would not go into the house. So his father came out and begged him to come in. But he answered his father,
"Look, all these years I have worked for you like a slave, and I have never disobeyed your orders. What have you given me? Not even a goat to have a feast with my friends. But this son of yours wasted all your property on prostitutes, and when he comes home, you kill a prize calf for him?"
The father answered,
"My son, you are always here with me. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be happy because your brother was dead, but now he is alive. He was lost, but now he has been found."
Thanks be to God for this, our holy scripture. And thanks to the youth who have been helping out in services and want to do more. They're interested in doing more drama, and they put together a little band even. And so they're going to be playing and singing one of these days. Some years ago, I was driving in Calgary on a main road, and as it is fairly common these days, there was somebody who was in just a little bit of a hurry. And they were weaving in and out of traffic. And so you get kind of used to it now, and I didn't pay too much attention to it. But obviously somebody was paying attention, and they weren't too happy about it, because at our next stoplight, somebody got out of a truck that was there, and the person who was driving erratically was also in a truck. Somebody got out of the truck and ran at the other truck of the guy who was driving and started cursing and swearing and screaming at this guy and started pounding on the windows so hard that I thought they were either going to break the window or break their hand. I was shocked, to say the least, but it happens more and more. I just read of one quite recently. The person who had lost their temper on this truck also happened to be a woman, which occasionally surprises us, but she had lost it. One of the greatest paradoxes that we find in life is that we are never less in control than when we try to control what we cannot. I'm going to say that again. One of the greatest paradoxes in life is that we are never less in control than when we try to control something that we cannot. The road rage driver wanted other drivers on the road to bend to her will, to drive in accordance with her needs. And when they didn't, she was completely out of control. This is why we have domestic abuse, because someone wants to control another and they cannot. And we really can't say much about that behavior, because we all act and think this way at times, like we'd like to control others or control circumstances so that we're safe and secure. And we may not be as overt as this woman was. We may not look as wild or ridiculous doing it, although on occasion we may. But really, deep down, it is what we want. We want to be in control. We want to think that we can control things in our lives around us. That somehow if we think or do the right things, then our lives and everyone and everything around us will be orderly and predictable, even when reason and experience tells us this is not true. All too often, our lives can be turned upside down by things that are completely out of our control. God has given us the ability to act and think and feel, but not to be in control. Even controlling our own lives is very, very limited. Think about it. If we as human beings, with goodness in our hearts, could control the world, there would be no disease, no abuse, no addictions, no natural disasters, and as I was thinking this morning, no facial hair. If human beings had mastered the art of control after all this time on Earth, the world would be, we would think, a much different place. We would be perfectly disciplined in our actions, able to control our emotions, and the world would be a lovely, orderly place. But let's face it, we're not in control. So why do we try so hard to take control of things over which we have no control, to determine the outcome of our lives or of others' lives? Because as we've talked about all through Lent, as we've journeyed through some of the paradoxes and challenges of life, that in the deepest, darkest silence of our inner places, where we dig into our souls, we find that one of the biggest fears we have in life is to lose control. Loss of the ability to control our destinies, our future, our lives. We fear the consequences if we think we have no control. That we can't somehow protect our children or our grandchildren, our spouses, our future. But we can't, because we all know that our lives can change in a moment. It probably already has. An accident or unexpected illness, a job loss, a turn in our economic situation, a move, even a word spoken to somebody that breaks a relationship, an action taken, and our world changes in that moment. And this is our fear. So we create these little boxes for our lives where we can live and continue to cling to the illusion that if we stay in these boxes, we can control them and there we can be safe. Nothing can touch us. We are in control. We want to believe this. And to be clear, I'm not saying that we can do nothing. We do have some influence over our thoughts and actions, and even we can influence others. We can manage our attitudes and responses to situations, and we do our best to develop disciplines that give our lives order, exerting some willpower in our lives. Yet many times we end up baffled by even our own thoughts and actions. The Apostle Paul said this very well in Romans 7 when he said, "I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate." Anybody but me ever done that? According to Paul, we don't do what we want to do sometimes, let alone what we know we could do. Control is an illusion. Let's face it. If I were completely in control of my life, you all have your own lists of what you would do, but I wouldn't be overweight. I'd live more simply. I'd have more money in the bank. I'd travel more and worry less, and I wouldn't have gotten sick. We can all think of things we would be or do or have if we were in complete control of our lives, but we're not. The Serenity Prayer says this very well. In fact, it says, "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can," which means me, "and the wisdom to know the difference." At the most, we have small, limited control over our own lives. In our story today, Jesus tells us the story of the two sons out of control. We start with the father. And Jesus suggests in his story that the father is God, as many have since. The father in the story doesn't really act at all like a father would in Jesus' time, who has very strong commitment to his children and does try to control them. But God doesn't even try to do that in this story. The younger son comes along and says to the father, "Father, give me my inheritance now. I want it now." And the father doesn't even think twice and says, "Yep, your choice." Divided his land, which would have been a difficult thing to do because land is the only investment that they had in that day. No bank accounts, no investments. And he divided his estate. He gave it, part of it, to his son, who sold it then, gave away the family inheritance, and went off, left the family. Off he goes to Vegas, or whatever might be at that time, and squanders all that he has on high living, or what he thinks of as high living. He has taken control of his own life, and good riddance to the family who's holding him back. In the meantime, back on the farm, the older son is at home, toiling away, doing his father's bidding, taking care of the family business, being the loyal and faithful son. Everything is in control for the older son. But the story, of course, as Jesus always does, takes a little twist. For the younger son, who lets everything he has slip through his fingers like sand through a sieve, finds himself with nothing. Nothing. The slot machines haven't paid off, and all of his fair weather friends have left him. He finds himself slopping pigs and salivating over the pea pods that the pigs are eating. And in one great aha moment, he comes to his senses, the story says, and realizes, I don't have control over my life. I really never did. And in that moment, I would argue, is when he began to live. In a humble moment of realization, he decides to go home and throw himself at the mercy of his father, if only to live as a servant in his father's home, for it was better than the life he thought he wanted and had in that moment. He let go of control and was going to throw himself on the father's mercy. So he travels home prepared to grovel at his father's feet, but just like God, his father does something unexpected and offered compassion, forgiveness, and mercy. In the meantime, back on the homestead, the elder son, upon hearing that his younger son had returned from scandalous living, hears about it and has a hissy fit, and refuses to come and celebrate that his brother is home, choosing instead to sulk. Perhaps rightly so, some of us secretly think. After all, he has done what we think of as the right thing, being the dutiful and responsible son. He's in control of his life. But remember what I said, when you think you are most in control is when you are out of control. And the son at this point does the opposite to the younger son. He tries to pull in more control and loses it. The control that he so tightly clung to is upset when things take an unexpected turn in his life, something he didn't want to happen, and he no longer has control over circumstances that he plainly expected to for the rest of his life. His version of the future is overturned, and he is upset, and we would be too. We do get upset when our version of the future is not what we want it to be. Except that he had no right to expect it. Nor do we. The future, our future, the world is not under our control. Yet the Father, God, is gracious. He comes to the son and says to him, "Son, you don't get it. Everything I have is yours. It's always been yours. You just don't see it. I love you. I will always love you. And I always have. You are entitled to everything I have. Nothing is going to change that. Nothing will ever change my love for you. But I love my younger son just as much. And I cannot just give it all to you. Everything I have belongs to you. I can love both of you without either of you losing anything." When we cling to the illusion that we control our lives, that we are the ones who miss out, letting go of that illusion opens us up to new possibilities. If we could learn to live life as possibility rather than certainty, questions rather than answers, adventure rather than a certain destiny, our lives could be filled with joy and hope rather than skepticism and trepidation. Understanding what life is rather than what we want it to be allows us to live into a life dependent on God rather than on ourselves. We were never meant to control our lives or another's life. We get into too much trouble when we do. People were not meant to be controlled. Just think of a time when somebody may have tried to control your life and what it felt like. It just doesn't feel great for anybody. We were meant to love and care for each other and to work together for the good of all. The illusion of control keeps us in tiny boxes of certainty, not risking our lives for the sake of joy and abundance. Letting go of the illusion means that we are prepared to accept life as we move into it, as we move toward it, rather than expecting it to conform to our expectation. It allows us to say, "It is what it is, and I will embrace it in all of its unpredictability and uncertainty, without needing it to be any other way than what it is. You've probably heard that phrase, let go and let God. This is the essence of giving over our will to the only power that really does exist in the world, the light and life and love of God. The power we seek through controlling is puny compared to this power. It's life-hampering and self-serving, yet God gives us so much more when we come to our senses and recognize that we are not in control. God's power is the way of relationship. It draws us into love and community. It draws us into care and compassion for the world, which is not at all predictable, but it is beautiful and it is wild and it is wonderful. It frees our souls to dance and soar and sing rather than to plod and predict and try to force it into something that makes us comfortable but lifeless. God doesn't even try to control us. God lets us live in this wonderful creation and asks us not to control it, but to care for it, to tend to it, just as God tends to us. In the end, God's story, the story that Jesus told, reminds us that God will let us go our own way if we make that choice, allowing us to think that we're in control if that's what we want. Yet it is only when we come to our senses that we can find our way back to our true home, in relationship with God and in communion with others and with creation. This is the only place where we are actually free enough to let go and live into the joy of living, unhindered by our need to know or worry about those things that we cannot possibly control. So let's open our minds and our hearts to whatever life brings and lean into it, knowing that God is already there, beckoning us into ever new possibilities as we trust the life-giving Spirit to lead us. Let's join together now in a time of reflection and prayer. There are prayer stations at either side of the sanctuary. If you have a concern or a care or a celebration,